You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 14 November, Purple Results Day. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, in Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth. Those Fashini Group results, and we'll touch on some Rand strength as well. Steve Benny from Sappi on results, debt at 20-year lows. And Cara Meering from Cliff Decker Hofmeyer, she's an associate there. Crypto assets, and so why they play such a big role in the grey listing status. And after what's happened with FTX over the last week, kind of makes sense. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Engineering body issues dire warning over collapsing public infrastructure. We chatted with them about a month or so ago. And it is, I mean, there's issues around just stuff not happening. I mean, the government just not doing the infrastructure spend. Business Day, EOH says 177 million settlement will not be a shock to its balance sheet. And that as it announces that it is doing a rights issue, but hasn't given the prices of that rights issue yet. Morning market, US was green, S&P up 0.9, Nasdaq up 1.8%. Asia is red, with Sydney down a couple of points, and Tokyo off 0.75%. Commodities mostly green overnight. Gold, 1,769. Brent, 96.53. Platinum, the only red, at $1,039 an ounce. And palladium, 2,029. Rand, 17.27. Bitcoin, 16,100. Tencent is up 2.9% in the Hong Kong lunch break. And top 40 looking for a green open, about 750 points. That's 1.1%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate, as always, early morning. Looking at those Fashini Group results, still some base effects. And I was looking at it compared to September 2019. Look at HEPS, they were 464 in 2019, 526. Dividend well down as well. Your take, the market didn't seem massively in love with those numbers.
Yeah, morning, Simon. I thought that, hey, but as you said, the base effect, if you had to do, compare them sort of the pre-COVID, which most of us are having to do these days, it's still lagging a little bit behind, whereas some other industries, I mean, the airline industry, just first thought is above where it was. So I think it's a little bit of catch up, but you know, Fashini itself, I don't think it was overly bad. I thought the online, sort of retail turnover, which they mentioned and highlighted in the earnings was quite encouraging. And I think a little bit of left field, you know, online in Africa was very encouraging. Small portion, to be granted, of the overall profit, but massive jump, almost 20% up. So I think they're moving in the right direction. And then I guess the price action on the day was a little bit of buy the rumor, sell the news. But I was quite encouraged by them personally.
And I take your point about the online. I mean, online is still tiny for them, particularly into Africa. But I mean, it broadly is going to be the future, whether it's 5, 10 or 20 years' time. This is how much of the shopping is going to happen, even in fashion.
Well, very much, not just even in fashion, so I mean, very much in fashion. I mean, if you look at what's happening abroad, and the Chinese giant Shine springs to mind in that sort of retail space. Yeah. And I think that's where things are going. And I think it's going in the right direction. I think that their platform is well received. It puts that platform they've launched has got about 200 odd brands available on it. And it's certainly it's one of the bigger ones in SA and one of the bigger ones on the continent. So once again, I think if you're a shareholder, don't be too despondent. I think overall their strategy is in the right direction.
Let's touch on the ZAR. We saw that US CPI on Thursday market. I mean, when I say I loved it, I'm underestimating them. It was an insane US day on Thursday. Of course, we're seeing rand strength. I mean, that is basically the world saying, well, US inflation is over, and we put that in inverted commas. Then you know, suddenly money starts moving out. We see some dollar weakness all flowing into the rand. Is that a fair assessment? Is it likely to continue? I mean, we're at 17.30 as we chat.
Yes, it's. I don't want to say too much and hex ourselves before 2 months to year end, but there are a number of as an investor or a trader, as someone who's in the market. And the number of risks, I think personally, are leaning a little bit more to missing out now on the outside. You know, it's been a tumultuous year. We all know exactly what's happened this year. But now with two odd months to go, there's a few things that could come right. And, you know, the war in Ukraine could get a little bit of a peace deal. There are murmurings of that. That's positive. China is talking about reopening. That is a positive. And the other one, of course, is inflation. It's all we've spoken about the last 6 months is inflation. And if we start seeing that roll over, which you've alluded to, it's looking like it certainly is. And of course, our local, don't underestimate the fact that the medium term budget was very well received. You know, we still got a little bit of a commodity tailwind, as you pointed out. All of these things together equate to a stronger rand. So, yeah, I mean, are you going to Margate or Paris in Christmas time, Simon? I'm not sure. But if we get to continue these good news, I think the rand will definitely sort of breach that, that 70 level. And on top of that as well, let's talk about a quick mention of the bonds. I mean, bonds could, SA 10 year, under 10% in the next couple of days.
No, absolutely. I'm going to Margate, but anyway, I take your point. It'll still be, it'll be nice to have a little bit of a year-end rally. I'm actually looking at the J200 chart, the top 40. It is looking, it's looking decent. We could have a green year, and that is not something we expected during most of the year. Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth, always appreciate the early morning.
Your money knows it's not just about the money. It's about your returns, returning the favor and empowering people. Your money can do more to change the narrative. Beyond delivering consistent returns, investing in the Stanlib Kanyisa Impact Investment Fund can help eradicate poverty and protect the environment. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Steve Binney, SAPI CEO. Results for the full year and fourth quarter ending September 2022. The big deal, Steve, and let's start with this. Net debt down 40% to its lowest in 20 years. It's sitting at, what, $1.16 billion. To be frank, over the last 20 or so years I've been covering SAPI, debt's always been a problem. You've fundamentally got this under control. And in fact, you want to get it a little bit lower still.
That's right. It's been a challenge for a number of years. We inherited that. But what has happened in recent times, we brought out our Thrive 25 strategy about 2 years ago, and we set ourselves a target of significantly reducing debt. Interestingly enough, if you went back 18 months, we've actually halved our debt. And as you say, we've now set our target of getting it to $1 billion or under. And, we're very confident of achieving that. And it's a very important milestone for us because it puts us in a much stronger position and gives us more flexibility as we move ahead with the opportunities and challenges that are out there.
Yeah, I mean, as witnessed by the first dividend since the 2018 September year end. The other big thing which really comes through in these numbers, I mean, there's strong demand, your implementation, you've got higher prices coming through to offset rising costs. You've really been able to manage what couldn't have been an easy 12 months.
Indeed, there are many challenges, as you know. You know, we've had the macroeconomic challenges, rising costs. We've had the ongoing impact of COVID, particularly in China, and now the war in Ukraine, and all the challenges that brings. And you know, we had to be bold, and we knew that the costs were rising. We've been undertaking a path for a number of years to reduce our exposure to graphic paper and move into packaging grades, and that's really paid off for us. And what we also benefited from the fact that a lot of capacity came out of the marketplace. Supply chain challenges worked in our favor as well in some markets. So we were pretty bold, and what we strived to do was put through higher selling prices to offset the costs, and we were able to deliver higher margins. And you know, there was obviously a strong bounce post COVID in terms of demand for our products, and then the macro trend of replacing plastics with paper for packaging solutions has created a wonderful opportunity for us.
It absolutely has, and but it's more than just, because some of the listeners might be thinking packaging, and they might be thinking a Takealot box, for example. But when I order a high-end, well, I mean, a cell phone, even frankly a mid-end cell phone, they come in beautiful packaging. You know, the boxes are exquisite. They're well put together, good quality. I mean, this is the sort of space you're operating in.
That's right. We do sell brown packaging in South Africa for the fruit exports, but broadly, when I'm talking about packaging, particularly overseas, it's coated packaging, and it's really taking our knowledge in the coated space, which traditionally came from magazines and brochures and the likes, and now applying that to packaging. So we're in high end space, as you say, electronic goods. We're in high end. Cosmetic products, consumer goods, and so on. And a lot of the big retailers, the big brand owners are now striving to have a more sustainable, greener solution. And they're wanting to replace, plastic with solutions.
The better pricing that you've seen, and just to give the listeners an example, I'm using Europe here, it's your biggest region. Your sales for September quarter this year, same as last year, 757 tons, but revenue coming in at, 982 million euros opposed to 589 million euro. Is pricing going to hold? I mean, you mentioned there were some sort of external issues. Will some of your pricing soften in the year ahead?
Firstly, yeah, you're right that the prices have risen dramatically, and we had to do it because that's what the way that our costs had gone up. Look, at the moment we're trying to hold on to those prices, and you know, I'm confident in the short term that we can maintain those levels. But obviously, you know, energy prices should start to come back down, and the prices of a lot of the chemicals that we use in the manufacturing process will come back a little bit. So I'm sure in time prices will come under pressure, but at the moment we're not seeing that and prices are holding.
Reading between what you're saying there is prices might come down a bit, but your input costs might also come down a bit. You mentioned energy, you mentioned chemicals.
That's right. And that's why, you know, we will firmly hold on to our selling prices, because that's what the costs dictate to us. So, sure, if costs start to come down, then there will be pressure. But at the moment, that's not happening, because, you know, natural gas prices in Europe, energy prices globally, the various commodities that we use, all of them are still at very elevated levels. So it's very important that we strive to hold on to the selling prices.
How much is energy a significant input in your cost structure? And I'm thinking here, Europe with the energy crisis that they're experiencing there, which your largest region.
That's right. We have fixed costs, which is essentially salaries and the likes, and then we have variable costs, our manufacturing costs, and that's roughly split two thirds variable costs, one third fixed costs. Of the two thirds that are variable costs, about just under a quarter of that relates to energy.
Okay, I would have thought maybe a larger number. We'll leave it there. Steve Binney, SAPI CEO, talking fourth quarter and year-end results to end September. And that is our poll today. We're looking at SAPI. I got to say, really good numbers. And as I said in the top of that interview, for 20 years, debt has been a problem. Suddenly, it's not. Question, SAPI versus Mondi. I just posted the chart on Twitter. You can go have a look and have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in StanLib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. StanLib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Kara Meering, a Cliftecker Hofmeyr associate. Kara, appreciate the early morning time. We scheduled this interview before crypto went all crazy with FTX and the like, but you're making a point in a note you put out around crypto assets actually playing a significant role in greylisting status, and hence the announcement by the FSCA last month around crypto actually could be helping us.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the main reasons that the announcement came when it did was because the FATF, so that's the Financial Action Task Force, gave South Africa essentially until October of this year to align some of the issues that it had with the recommendations that the task force gave us in October of last year. And the cutoff date was October of this year, and that's exactly when the FSCA declaration came out. So I definitely think it has well, hopefully it will play a big role in making sure that we don't get onto that grey list in February of next year.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the concerns around crypto, and this doesn't necessarily, you know, make some of the issues, and it wouldn't have solved, I mean, you know, FTX and the like. But what it does do is it brings it into the sort of the formal structures of financial services, which is so hugely important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think, well, so there's a lot of similar companies to FTX in South Africa who are also not necessarily an exchange themselves, but some of them are. So, for example, Luna. And we definitely don't want something like what happened to FTX to happen to Luna. And I think this declaration definitely plays a big role in ensuring that, you know, there are these regulatory measures in place to ensure that there's at least some form of compliance with the Financial Advisory and Intermediary Services Act.
And this would then suggest, and I'm not sure that anyone was suggesting otherwise, but it does give us clear indication that government, you know, there might be an argument that perhaps government's moving a little slowly, but government is moving, and broadly, I mean, the Financial Sector Conduct Authority is an arm of government in many senses. We are moving forward. We're paving the way to, as best we can, avoid that potential grey listing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think government realizes how well, the drastic impact it will have if we do end up on that grey list. If you look at, you know, some research done by the IMF, they say typically countries who end up on the grey list, you know, their GDP exports decline by 7%, mm-hmm. their foreign direct investment declines by 3%. You know, those are the kinds of consequences that we definitely want to avoid. And I think the government, you know, is taking that very seriously, and that's one of the reasons that they, you know, took the steps that they did.
Broadly, how, if we look at South Africa and our sort of how we deal with crypto, how far are we behind the developed market? Because my sense is it's a bit hodgepodge depending on the market. But I mean, are we sort of up there with the DMs in terms of dealing with crypto assets?
So, I mean, I think we're not quite there yet. I think mm-hmm. the position that governments have taken is more a reactionary one rather than a proactive one. So we've seen, for example, in England, they've been making legislation for years now, regulating different crypto assets, talking about how we should define a crypto asset. Is it, you know, is it property? Is it currency? Mm. So I think definitely South Africa is slightly behind. But if you compare us to a few other developed countries, we're again perhaps a bit ahead. So I don't think we're too far behind. But I do think taking a proactive stance as opposed to this kind of reactionary measures that we've seen from governments would probably be a better approach.
One of the other big parts of crypto, and particularly sort of late last year, early this year, was NFTs, non-fungible tokens. That's the space that certainly in terms looking at sales at places like OpenSea has you know, down 90% from the beginning of the year. But does this also have implications for NFTs, which are by definition a crypto asset?
Yeah, so I mean, for various reasons, the declaration has decided to exclude NFTs from the definition of financial products. Mm-hmm. The reason given by the FSCA in their like policy documents is essentially that they don't think in the South African market NFTs are, you know, very big yet. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of activity going on there, and therefore they didn't think that it was necessary to regulate it. I'm not necessarily sure that that's the best approach to have taken. I think NFTs are an exploding market. So it definitely, I mean, the value of individual NFTs have gone down significantly since the beginning, because in the beginning it was this exciting, novel idea. Mm. And I think the market's done what it always does, which is, you know, regulate the price to a point where it is what the price should actually be for NFTs. But I would definitely say there is movement in the South African economy where we've seen companies moving towards NFTs. For example, I think there's a development in apartment block in Cape Town now that kind of came out and said, well, you know, you can buy these properties through the NFT system, and they're going to try and cut off intermediaries like the deeds office. So I think we'll have to see, you know, how that's going to practically play out. But there definitely is movement in the market towards using more NFTs. So I would think that at some point either they would need to uplift that exemption and say, well, now actually the declaration applies to NFTs, or they would need to make separate regulations that specifically apply to NFTs.
Now, I take your point. And sooner or later, it's going to have to happen. I mean, NFTs are here to stay. We can't just ignore them. We'll leave that there. Kara Meering, Cliff Decker, Hofmeyer Associate, appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. On Friday, we were chatting with Jimmy Moyoha. We were talking U.S. inflation for October. And the question we asked you is inflation over in the U.S.? Half of you, almost half of you, said, nope, still lots of risks. I take your point. Still lots of risks out there. 40%, however, were saying, yep, it looks like it's done, but a long road to go. I think that's where my vote went. A tenth of you said, yep, absolutely, it's done. It's all party time. And man, that's what the U.S. markets did on Thursday evening. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. We've got Charles Savage.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.